Okay, today we're on phase three of our processing, and we're going to just be going over documents and what they are. Don't really know if actually this is something that needs to be recorded, but let's record it anyways, because if people have questions, I can always answer them. So I just sent out the username and password to our Google account, or Gmail account, sorry. I guess they're kind of the same thing, right? Trina, everyone I'm assuming has to obviously log into here in order to see what I'm seeing, right?
They do.
Okay. Okay,
is
looks
it the
like
Stanton file
ahead.
That you uploaded?
Yeah, it looks like did it full? Wait. Okay, it didn't fully upload. It's still waiting. It says one more minute. But while it's doing that,
Yeah, Hope's here. Sorry about that. I dialed into the wrong one because I was helping an IEP find the Chris's conference call number.
No big deal.
So I called into his instead.
That's okay. We haven't even. What actually the major thing we're doing right now is everyone just figured out how to log into the Gmail account. So that's what everyone's doing now, and I just figured out how to upload files there, which is good because all of us are going to have to upload files there. For now, guys, everything that you are collecting from someone, just please send me a copy of all the documents. Let's try to knock it on this call how we can easily upload these things, because if this could sync to like our desktops, that would be easier than trying to upload single documents there, you know, every single time someone sends you documents, you know. But my desktop is synced and backed up as well, so if I have a copy of everything, you know, as well, we're still good for now, but we have to figure this out. Ryan, you think we should upload the Andrew George file that closed? That was a rental loan. You don't
sure.
Even know the documents I got on that file, but you know what? Let's go for it. That probably won't upload till tomorrow. 329 documents I have in that file.
Nice.
Yeah, that was fun. All right, let's
That's
see if Deidre
insane.
Is... Guys, is everyone in the Gmail account? Does anyone need me to help you on where you need to go?
You want us in the Google Drive, right?
Yeah, we're just going to go into the Gmail account, and then Trina told me to click on the app section, go down to the Drive button.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Little triangle, three different colors. And then hopefully everyone's seeing what I'm seeing. There's two folders created. I created one for Deidre Stanton. It's number two.
Yep.
It was a second closing for her. Andrew George is uploading.
I just have a quick interruption. I do not have this link for this Google Drive to follow it, actually. So that's why I was just requesting for the user ID and password and the link so that I can just directly follow up that.
You just go to gmail.com or
mm-hmm.
Google, and then you can just log into like an email account like you would log in.
Okay.
For any Gmail account. So I just sent the username to the account and the password.
Okay.
Can you just pull
up
a browser?
I haven't received it yet, so yeah. So that's why I was just asking.
Oh, yeah, no big deal. Yeah, just go to, you know, just Google. Go to Google. You can log
mm-hmm.
into Gmail from there, or if you just go to gmail.com, you can log in from there.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure if you're already in your own Gmail account, you're going to have to sign out and then log in with this new username
mm-hmm.
and password.
So have you already sent it this new user and password through email?
Yep.
Okay, I haven't received it yet, so that's why I'm finding it difficult. Could you please resend it again, once again, on my ID, which is Rohit at...
Yeah, not a problem. You should have it, though. Did everyone else get it?
I got it.
He did, but I'm not seeing his name on the email thread for it.
Ah, maybe that's why he didn't get it. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem.
That would explain it.
Yep.
Sorry, I wouldn't have looked until now.
Sorry, I'm getting, like, I have so many emails in my inbox right now. I'm, like, I'm trying to not have a meltdown right now on this call.
Oh, don't do that.
Yeah, I know. Okay. All right, Rohit, I just sent it again, and you were on that chain, and
okay.
Sorry about that.
No problem. I just got it.
Okay.
So I'll be able to log in. No problem.
Okay.
Yeah, you can continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is everyone else logged in?
I am.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm here.
So, all right. Well, if you guys click on the Deidre Stanton file, and, you know, this is, it's only, I'm only seeing, like, three boxes under this, which is odd.
Well, there's more folders up top. The bank statements and then that one address are in other folders within her. This Google Drive keeps it however you had it.
Okay, so what we're going to do is, okay, so this is what happens. Sometimes I have multiple deals with the same borrower, like this borrower. And so what I did was I split her file up into so what's going to happen to you is if you have multiple files for the same borrower and they're closing in the same entity name, you're not going to need to obviously ask them for entity docs again for their second deal because you already have them, you know? And, you know, copies of IDs, I mean, some of that stuff should be the same. Now, obviously, the documents specific to the property are going to be different because it's a different property. But, okay, so I'm just going to click on the address up there. And I'm actually glad that this uploads exactly the same because if you click on the address, which is 3435 Louisiana Ave, we just closed, got the wire in for that deal today, and was it $6,700? $6,375 bucks we got in as a wire on that deal. Now, obviously, we have payouts and stuff, but yeah, but I'm glad we got that in. So,
okay, for the rest of the team, really quick, since Megan works on Macintosh, that .ds_store. That's
mm-hmm.
in there. Don't touch that. That's for the Macintosh.
Okay. That's
all that file is. It looks weird for the rest of us because we see it. Don't touch it. Don't delete it.
Okay.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you, Hope. Okay, so you guys can kind of see, like, inside of every file that I have, I also, like, and I know we went over this yesterday, I also have folders in there to keep things organized. As you can see, if you scroll down, I do have files just randomly in there, you know, things that are, you know, things that don't really need to be in their own box, but again, you kind of organize things however you want. Like someone's IDs, you know, you don't need to create a box as IDs, you know, you're going to see that there's an ID in the file. But anyways, you'll see there's a folder right there for appraisal. That was their appraisal that came back. The closing package, that was actually the lender's closing package. If a lender ever copies you on a closing package, and some of our lenders do that, some of our lenders don't. They will just confirm with me that it's been sent. It takes lenders, you know, I mean, to put these things together, it takes time. And I know a lot of the times they have to pay attorneys and stuff to put them together. So some lenders are just sensitive about that. They will not give out their closing package to the broker. And other lenders do. I mean, we work with all of our lenders so closely at this point, I don't know why a lender wouldn't copy me or any of us on a closing package, but everyone's got their own thing. So let's just kind of go through some of this. I mean, you can see down there that there's obviously a copy of Deidre's ID. Just the first couple thing here, this is, it says blank CCA. That stands for credit card authorization form that I had to get from her separately. Usually that is a part of the lender's loan application, and you'll see the loan application, but something must have gone on with the card, and I had to get another version. The draw schedule, I don't know if we can open that. Does it allow us to open that?
Yep.
Okay, that's actually a document, and Ryan, this is good for you to know. That's actually a document that Templeview will give you prior to closing, and Megan's running a Templeview deal too. And that will go over exactly how Templeview actually wants the rehab to be done. You need a copy of that prior to the closing because it goes over draw, you know, this is what they're getting in draw one. They want all things to be done in draw one in order for them to get draw two. Is anyone able to open that?
Yeah, I'm
I am, but there's not really anything in it. And was it not completed?
No, it's an Excel document. I don't.
Yep,
no,
I opened
it. For like draw one, draw two, draw three, draw four, it just says NA. It doesn't have any like actual information.
Yeah, I don't know why it didn't upload right. But anyways, that's not how it looks in real life. I'll go over that with you, Megan, before closing. I always keep a copy of our intake form and the quote in a file. Every time the quote changes, I go back to that Word document and I redo the quote. Obviously, I've emailed that to the borrower. I put the date the quote changed and I put why. And the biggest thing about processing is keeping track of that quote and why it changed. You know, credit changed. Borrower couldn't verify their experience that they've sold this many properties or that they have these leased units or whatever. So just for the people processing, you have to do that. That is the only way you're going to stay organized and keep your sanity. This scope of work document in here, there's two different kinds. We have one that's a PDF and one that's an Excel file. That's also a rehab budget. That scope of work, rehab budget, bid, people use those three words interchangeably to mean, you know, this is the work that needs to be done on the property, you know, to get it improved. Most people send a scope of work in on an Excel file, which is a line item thing. That's really the best way to do it. It's organized. It's easy to see. If someone ever submits you a handwritten scope of work, you know, I've had people, borrowers, like scribble like a rehab budget with like a pencil and some chicken scratch, and I've literally told them, like, come on, like, you know, I can try to send this to the appraisal management company to get your appraisal order. That's how we do it with Temple View, but this just looks sloppy, like right off the bat. You know, people have to take pride in their deal. You know, this scope of work, the appraiser is going to use to appraise your property. So if you want to get accurate values out of it, put some effort into the scope of work. Make it as detailed as possible. I love the line item rehab budgets, but I also love when people explain what they want to do. Like sometimes, you know, and that's kind of more of a scope of work. A scope of work also is a little bit more wordy, explains and then has a cost. That's really what appraisers need, just so everyone's aware. They really, really like to know, you know, instead of just putting a line item for kitchen and putting $5,000, you know, again, look over these things when people send them to you. Tell people, what are you doing to the kitchen? What materials are you using? What are you using for the countertop? What are you using for the floor? What are you using for the cabinets? What are you using for the fixtures? Don't just tell me $5,000 to the kitchen. What is the appraiser just supposed to automatically know what you're doing? And that's the biggest problem in this business and probably any business is the lack of communication and just, you know, explaining things properly to people so that they understand. So what I try to do in this business is we have all these complicated docs, procedures, all this stuff. But what I try to do is just always go back to the basics and explain everything simply, you know. And when, again, someone sends me in a scope of work where they clearly have not put any effort into it or it's just really vague, I always let them know. And you're going to want to let them know because even though you're a processor, you're also walking someone through this process and it's going to be a process. You can let them know.
Hey, Megan. If you want, I figure out how to get either of those open so you can actually see the numbers if you want everybody to look at
them. The draw schedule?
Yeah.
On the draw schedule?
Yeah, so when you first open it, it shows it in like a – there's an option up at the top that says open with Google Sheets, mm-hmm. and that actually makes it editable. If you click on that, it'll actually pop up with all the numbers and everything.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ryan. Okay, if you guys want to do that, click on the draw schedule and just click on the Google Sheets. The point about the rehab budget real quick, and we'll get onto this, is just, you know, just please tell people to put some effort into it, and please let them know that, again, the appraiser is appraising their property based on what they're giving us. Now, everybody wants their property to appraise, and if it doesn't, they're all upset. But I always let people know, if this is what you're giving me to go on, this little thing you scribbled on a word, like, on a piece of paper and I can barely read it, if this property does not appraise, like, that's on you. You've given the appraiser nothing to go on, you know? So just, again, make them aware. So, yeah, we'll just touch on this document for a second. For Megan and Ryan, Templeview is the only lender we work with that does this. We don't have any other rehab lender that we work with that actually dictates how they want the rehab done, just so you're aware.
Okay.
Templeview is a rehab lender we work with that, you know, Ryan, as you know, they allow so much construction. We did a deal with them last year where the person added a whole third floor to the property. It was a lot of construction. They don't care if the rehab is way beyond the purchase price, like, but they have a construction department, and that person, his name is Andrew, is the one that puts all these together. You know, you always need this prior to closing because you have to go over it with the borrower. They will not create this, of course, until the appraisal is back. They want all the contractor documents in, and they need the rehab budget on their form, or they will not create this draw schedule. And if you don't have it, obviously we can't close. So that's why everything needs to come in ASAP. But you can kind of see here, this is still a little different viewing just from what it looks like in real life, but it's pretty much the same thing. I just moved column C over a little bit because some of the numbers were cut off for me, but Templeview, everyone is going to have to learn their process. They are a lender we work with a lot. We really like working with them. All of their draws are actually done up front, which is very unique because every other rehab lender we work with, all their draws are done in arrears, meaning the borrower has to start the rehab with their own money first, and then they can request a draw, a site visit. So what happens when they request a site visit slash a draw, the lender will send someone physically out to their property to inspect it to make sure things were done, and then they can get reimbursed for that. So most site visits, just so everyone's aware, cost $200, and that's pretty much across the border with every lender. Some lenders, they're like $150. Other lenders we work with might be $250, but it's most of our lenders, it's just $200 a draw that the borrower does have to pay for to get that site inspector to come out. So might want to make people aware of that as you're going through the process with them, especially if it's their first rehab deal. Let them know, you know, the site inspection will cost, you know, $200 every time the person has to come out and inspect your property. But with Templeview, all their draws are done up front. They do dictate, though, how they want the project to go, and that's something you have to get the borrower on board with. You know, let them know, like, draw as long. Now, Deidre, at closing, well, I guess she got her money wired to her today. She got an upfront draw of $30,000. That's draw one. Since this was a purchase, she had to come, you know, with down money and closing costs. But because she got that upfront draw that Templeview gave her of $30,000, that lowered her closing costs by $30,000. So say in total what she had to bring to closing was $60,000 without the upfront draw. Because she's getting this upfront draw, she's only bringing $30,000 to closing. Because it doesn't make sense. Why would she bring $60,000 just for Templeview to send her $30,000 wire, you know, back to her? She might as well just bring $30,000, let their $30,000 be used to, you know, cover closing costs and stuff like that. But she has to. She's aware that she obviously need, if she's using that $30,000 to lessen the amount of money she's bringing to closing, she still needs to have that $30,000 on hand to start this rehab. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Brian, did you understand that?
Well, yeah, but I already know that. So
okay.
Yeah, I understand but it.
It can be confusing for people. I explain this to people before every single Templeview closing. I go over this like really extensively because, you know, you are getting that upfront draw. You know, I always let them know, and that's why, like, on our quotes, and I see you do this too, Ryan, I always let them know, I highlight the amount of money you need to bring to closing in red. Any credits on a quote, I highlight in blue. But I always let them know, like, regardless, you still need the same amount of money to do the deal. Say she needs $60,000 to do this deal, she still needs $60,000 with the upfront draw or not. She just doesn't have to bring all the money to closing because she's getting that upfront draw of $30,000. She only has to bring $30,000 But if she's using that upfront draw to go towards the purchase and the closing costs, then she needs to have 30 grand on hand so she can start the rehab, because Templeview's only given her one upfront draw. So anyways, I can go over that with Megan and with some other people that start running Templeview deals, but all their draws are done upfront. So once they complete everything in draw one, all these little things, site inspector will come out. They will just make sure these things are complete. They don't actually need to keep receipts of these things. The inspector with Templeview is just going to check off that this is done. And if they are all done, then site inspector will report back to Templeview, and Templeview will then wire her the $31,050 for draw two. And all of Templeview's draws work exactly like that. They're all done up front besides the last draw. So draw six is typically 10% of the rehab budget. It's usually a number around there. That one draw will not be done up front. That's how Templeview always does it. I'm sorry, is that draw five? It looks a little weird on here. I'm not sure, but it does say draw six, and then you'll see it's building permit, electrical, landscaping, other plumbing. It's always just the little last things you got to do to a house to have it officially done. That one will not be done up front. They will have to complete that with their own money, and then they can have a site inspector come out and reimburse them. That last one is always done in arrears. Templeview always puts a really nice contingency budget on their rehabs, and I love that. A lot of our other rehab lenders, like, don't do that at all. So, you know, if we're hoping that the borrower is, you know, prepared, that if the if it goes over, they can handle it themselves. But anyways, just so you know, that contingency budget of $19,000, Deidre and Jermaine can request that money at any time throughout the rehab deal. So say they're on draw one and all of a sudden they're doing some debt. Replaced or something weird, whatever that happens. Now, anything they request contingency funds for, they do need a receipt for. If it's not part of this budget outlined here, they do need to keep a receipt for that contingency thing, or Templeview will not reimburse them without a receipt for the contingency. This is just how Templeview works. All of our rehab lenders work different with their draws and how they do their things. So please don't think anyone on the phone, I'm saying this is how every rehab lender works. It's not. This is just how Templeview works. I always, a best bet, you know, if anyone ever asks you about a rehab deal, best bet to tell the borrower, keep a receipt for everything. Just keep a receipt for everything. Whether the lender requires or not, just keep it, because something funky could come out throughout the rehab, happen, and all of a sudden they want proof of that. Like, I always just tell people, CYA, just keep a receipt for everything, but Templeview actually does not require that you keep a receipt for anything besides actually the contingency items. But yeah, that's just my little bit of advice to give to people. That's how the draw schedule works. All right, let me see if I can get back here. Okay, all right, so I guess you can just get out of that. All right. Okay, EMD, there's an EMD document here next to Deidre's ID. You always want to get a copy of, you know, that stands for earnest money deposit. That's money someone puts down as like a good faith to the seller. Hey, you know, we're going to put down $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, whatever it is to show you we're committed to getting this loan done. We're going to close on this loan. I would say most EMD, you know, that's the copy of the check she sent me to prove that's what she paid. And that's really what you need, proof of the check that they sent. Some lenders like Velocity, they usually want a copy of the bank account that shows the EMD went out, and then they match it up with the check. I think that's kind of like overkill. Obviously, the title company can confirm how much EMD is put down, and sometimes they're the ones holding the money. Sometimes it's the realtor if there's realtors involved. Sometimes it's the title company. It's usually one or the other. But always get a copy of that. You want a copy of that because when you get the final HUD one on the deal, a HUD one, closing statement, settlement statement, people use this word to mean all these different things. It's just basically the final numbers on the deal. When you get the final HUD one, you want to make sure the borrower is credited for that on there. I've gotten several HUD ones where the title company didn't credit them for the EMD they already put down. So I'll send them a copy of the invoice saying, hey, they already paid for this, or they put this down, you know. I'm assuming the title company should be aware, but I don't know. Sometimes I guess they're just not checking all their documents. That's really it. I mean, the loan app's self-explanatory. On TempleView, the person who has the best credit, the person who's going to personally guarantee the loan, they're the ones who should sign the loan app. Sometimes you'll have multiple people in a company, and it's always whoever has the best credit, whoever's going to PG the loan, that's the person that needs to sign the loan application. If for some reason someone goes into the deal and they plan to be the PG and then their credit doesn't pass, we're going to need a new loan. If they add someone to their entity, which they can with TempleView, even if they're a 1% member, they can still PG the loan. TempleView will need a new loan application with that person signing the loan application, not the original person that thought they were going to sign. Track record's pretty self-explanatory. They can list properties on there, investment properties only, no personal home residences. They can list investment properties they've sold over the past 3 years on there and any current rental properties as well, because TempleView allows them. One thing you want to pay attention to on the track record with TempleView is if you want to click on it, you can. On here, it actually asks, obviously, the property address that you've sold. It asks how the property was titled. And if it's not the same name as the entity that you're closing in. So if you open up this track record, I just double-clicked on it too, Ryan, and it came up as a PDF almost. This looks much nicer. Okay. You could see on this track record, it says owner on title. One is NO2 SAC Transportation LLC. Go down to the second property address, 4008. Owner on title is a different company name, DJWS Holdings LLC. If you ever see multiple company names on the track record, just make the borrower aware, I'm going to need an operating agreement for every single entity on here proving that the borrower is part of this entity, because obviously they would be on the operating agreement and they would sign and it would notate their percentage. Doesn't matter what their percentage is in the other entities, as long as they're a part of that entity somehow. They could be a 1% member as well. That's something to make them aware of. And just so you know, that doesn't come out until underwriting. And I've definitely learned that the hard way. I'm trying to ask them for all these operating agreements for other entities, and the borrower's confused. Like, why do I need to give you those? We're just, this is the company I'm closing in. I have to explain, well, I have to verify your experience with them, and they need proof that you're a part of this entity. That's why they want the operating agreement, to see that your name's on there. It's not a good thing to be asking people for last minute. Okay, so the rehab budget's pretty self-explanatory. That's the only other ones down there, and you'll saw a scope of work. I can't remember, honestly. I know why I have multiple rehab budgets. Okay, so I use the scope of work they gave me to order the appraisal, because you can typically do that with most of our lenders. A lot of our lenders do want the rehab budget on their form prior to closing, but typically you can just use the borrower's. I had to turn it into a PDF, though, because I had to upload it to the appraisal company's system. They want it as a PDF, so that's why you see an Excel and a PDF. And then the other rehab budget they gave me is on TempleView's form. So that's really all there. Those major documents, we'll go through the buckets, and then we can move on to the next one. One thing I want to go over is our fee agreement, because this – so if everyone can click on that, it is it's basically on the top right. It says PDF fee agreement. Okay, so these are our fee agreements. Again, I try to make things really, really simple. This document used to be loaded with a ton of legal jargon. I had no idea what it even meant myself. it sounded great, but I just think it was a little too much, because we need people to sign this, so that we can represent them. And then when we're contacting the title company or the lender or whoever we have to contact about the deal, they know who we are. So if you overdo it, I feel, with all the legal jargon, they might feel a little uncomfortable about signing this, and they might say, well, my lawyer needs to see this before I can sign it. I've had borrowers say that to me before. So ours is just, the only line items that ever change on this fee agreement is just the date at the top, obviously. The company, we always put the company name first that they're closing in. Always the company name, then space, slash, and whoever the PG is going to be. I always put the company name and the borrower's name, because what people will do to me sometimes is throughout the loan, they will try to change the entity name that they're closing in. And it's doable. We've done it before, but it causes problems because then I have to, you know, let the lender know they're changing the entity name. So obviously their mortgage documents are the correct entity name. I have to let the insurance person know that, you know, the insurance now needs to be in this entity name, not the one I already gave you. And I have to let the title company know. And then the title company always wants a copy of the entity documents. Obviously the lender needs a copy as well. The insurance agent doesn't need a copy of any entity documents. Just tell them what it needs to be in. Just make sure that entity name is spelled exactly correct, exactly as it is on their entity documents or in underwriting. The underwriter from the lender will kick it back and say, well, this says LA2 Park has a comma LLC, but I'm looking at their entity documents and I don't see a comma there. I've had underwriters do that to me over a comma, and, you know, and it's like, come on. So just make sure you're really looking at their entity documents. I typically go off the state articles, however it's worded exactly on there. And just make sure it's exactly the same whenever I'm emailing the insurance agent, the title company, the lender, everyone. Also, in our background notes under every borrower, we also have the entity name right there. So just make sure you're going into there and updating that entity name so it's exactly correct, if it's like a digit off or it has a comma or it doesn't, just so you can copy and paste each time. You don't want to have to be trying to check the entity documents every time to figure out how exactly is this thing spelled. Make it easy on yourself. Anything that is important, put in the background notes on the left so you can easily refer to it. Then obviously the property address changes for each deal. So we have it locked up by the entity name, the PG's name, the property address. You know, at this point, nobody can say we're not involved with this transaction. Even if they did change the entity name, which people do on me, Deidre is still the person who owns the company. This is the property address. It's very clear that we are associated with this transaction with the title company. The only other thing that changes is just the percentage for our fee, but we actually don't do our fee agreements by percentage anymore. Ryan brought up a great point a couple weeks ago that, you know, if someone's loan amount becomes lower because the property didn't appraise or something, why does our fee become lower? We didn't do less work, you know, and great point. So whatever that 2% fee is now, we are just literally putting that number on the fee agreement. That being said, though, I actually updated our fee agreement a little bit ago. So this one is actually a little bit dated. So I probably should be giving you guys the more current ones. We'll go over the fee agreement some other time. But this is still a good one. It's not changed too much. Anything that's really important here is underlined. You know, it says when we get paid on the day of closing. It says how we're going to get paid. The title company is going, you know, we'll collect our fee and we'll distribute it to 11 Capital Finance. That's how it always works. I did have on here, you know, client gives 11 Capital the right to represent them and gives them authorization for any lender to talk to 11 Capital about any aspect of their loan. I have elaborated on that a little bit more. I've also put that, you know, we're allowed to handle sensitive documents. We're allowed to distribute those documents that are needed to the title company. I had to add that because we actually were doing a loan once with Builders Finance, who's a ground of construction lender we work with, and they called me and they told me we have to deny this loan. And I was like, well, why? You know, and they were like, well, we can't actually tell you why because, you know, nothing on your fee agreement says that we're allowed to disclose these things to you. And I'm like, well, obviously, guys, I sent you the deal. What am I supposed to call the borrower and say? The lender can't do your loan but won't tell me why, you know? So anyways, I actually changed that just because of them. They have a more legal way that they look at things and how they like to work with their brokers. So that was their suggestion. I thought it was a good idea, so I changed it. Anything else on here? I mean, I've made it a little bit more clear. There's, you know, on the paragraph where our percentage is, I have made it a little bit more clear and even less mumble-jumble wordy on when our fee is due, which obviously is the day of closing, you know, at closing, the day of closing. I've made it a little bit more clear that, you know, we, if the borrower goes and finds financing on their own with some another broker or another lender, I've made it more clear that they're not liable to pay us a fee. I made it a non-exclusive. So, I mean, if they want to, if basically it does say on there that, you know, if they do find financing on their own, they don't owe us a fee. And that's in the paragraph before that, but I've made it a little bit more clear. I also made it more clear on the one paragraph that, you know, that that basically we're due our fee, not just giving them an acceptable lending offer or lending commitment, whatever you call it, but I just made it a little bit more clear that it's actually going to get to closing, and obviously, of course, that's when our fee is due. So if anyone ever asks you, we don't get paid until the day of closing, unfortunately. That's how it works here, even though we are working on loans and doing a lot of things. So if someone calls off the closing or decides not to move forward with the deal, or the seller and buyer get in a fight and obviously we're representing the buyer and the deal blows up, we are not due anything. So just please let them know that. That will be people's number one question to you. What if something happens to this deal and it doesn't close? Well, we don't get paid. It says right on here that we only get paid on the day of closing. So if we never get there, you know, that really stinks, but that happens sometimes. Okay. So let's go up and let's go into the contractor docs real quick. Why did it do that? It took me back to the wrong spot. Okay. So you're going to have to collect contractor docs with Templeview, and some of our other rehab lenders do want contractor docs as well. Some of our rehab lenders never ask for anything on the contractor, which I kind of find odd, but they don't. RCN doesn't ask for anything on the contractor. Flip Funding doesn't ask for anything on the contractor. Yeah. I mean, how do you know they're using someone that's licensed and insured, and what if they're not and someone gets hurt on the property? And I mean, I don't know. So that's every lender's discretion, but every contractor with Templeview, and if you do have to collect contractor docs, are typically the same thing for most lenders. Every lender wants a copy of their liability insurance coverage, so you can see that page there. That is exactly what the page needs to look like. You can see at the top it says certificate of liability insurance. Again, if you're not sure what something is, there should always be a title to the document on the top of the page. If there's not, something's wrong. Somebody has cut something off. But with Templeview, there's this date on here for the certificate of insurance. There's a date in the upper right-hand corner. Seeing if I can make this bigger at all. That date must be less than 90 days old. And that is on our document list with them, just so everyone's aware. But that date has to be less than 90 days old, or, again, the underwriter will kick it back and say it has to get updated. I guess they want that less than 90 days old because they want to know that the insurance is active. Even though the policy, in the middle of the page under Section A, it states the starting date and ending date of the policy. So here's another one. Always make sure those dates make sense. Like if someone's giving you a liability insurance page that's the contractor's and it's expired like 5 days ago, well, that's not going to work. And just so you know, the processor may not say anything to you, the lender's processor that you're working with and going back and forth documents will probably not say anything to you because they just are looking like, oh, I got it. Okay, I got that. A lot of times, a lot of edits don't start happening until it gets to underwriting. The processor's job is just to collect every single document on the file. Obviously, it's better if they can go through them and make sure they're all correct. But some processors at lenders just, okay, I got that, check. Once they have every document they need, maybe that's 30 documents, they just hand the package to the underwriter, and the underwriter just rips the file apart and just, goes back and here, this needs edited, this needs edited, this needs edited. And the more you have to do that to someone, the more frustrated they're going to become with you if you did not catch those things up front. Some things are just what they are. Some things you're not going to catch. It's okay. You're not going to catch everything. You know, just if people get frustrated, just say, I'm sorry. That's what I do sometimes. If I make a mistake, once in a while I make a mistake on things. Once in a while people send me things, and what I really can't stand when people send me documents that are very important, don't label it as like image one. Like so many people send emails and image one is just like a copy of their logo or something that somehow got attached to their email. Like, if you're sending me something really important that I need, take a little bit of effort to like label it so I know that it's attached, you know, but just so you know, people will not do that. You're going to have to download things and go through them. There's a letter here that Temple View requires. If the contractor has employees, they need workers' compensation insurance, and they're going to send you another certificate of insurance page. A lot of times the workers' compensation insurance will actually be listed on the liability as well. It will be like a box underneath. It might be a separate page, but it will say workers' compensation insurance on the page. If they don't have employees, they don't need workers' comp, and they just make them write up this letter stating, I don't have workers' comp because they don't have any employees on their company letterhead. They always want a copy of the contractor's license, which you'll see here, down here. You know, open it up, get familiar with what these documents look like. They look different in every state. So I know that stinks because I look at these things sometimes and I'm like, you know, what I usually do, because Temple View is so big on this, is when I get all the contractor documents, I send them to Katia, who's our processor for Carrie, and I say to her, is this the, can you verify, please, with underwriting, that this is the contractor's license you're looking for? I need someone over there in the construction department to tell me because I don't know. You know, some states the contractor will come over to you and say, well, we don't have a license in this state. There is no GC license. And I'm like, okay. Then I go back to Katia at Temple View and I email her and I just let her know that, you know, this is what the contractor's telling me. Is this correct? I'm not going to wait till last minute to find out because they won't close the deal if we don't get them all the docs. So you got to find out. Some states it's called a home improvement license. So you'll see sometimes people send you their home improvement license. That usually is correct. Other states, it's something a little bit more formal like this. And then Temple View just requires that the contractor send two past addresses for rehab projects they've done. And they generally do like to know what's done, but sometimes they'll just accept the addresses they did on this file. And I just make it my own separate Word document and put it in the file under GC Docs so I know when I go in there, there's four things I always need from Temple View, and I see all four of them there, and we're good. That's how I organize things. Let's get into entity docs, and this probably is going to be the only file we get a chance to go over today.
Hey, Megan?
Yeah.
And I don't want to get too in the weeds here if you don't want to go over this, but what do you do if you've got a borrower saying, hey, I just want to do the work myself?
That's a good question. So I always verify that. That's something I should even put into – we should even – verify with quoting, you know? I mean, maybe not quoting, but I got to put that somewhere on the processing manual. So that's a good question because some states have, I guess, I don't know if it's a law, but like some states, if you're the current homeowner, and I'm pretty sure actually most states are like this, but if you're the current homeowner, you can actually do improvements to your own property, I believe. We've done that with Temple View in the past. But there's states, though, that require you to be licensed in order to pull permits for things. So you just basically just, you know, whoever the rehab lender is, just email them and just let them know the borrower's planning to do the work on this property. You know, that, you know, here's the address of the deal again. Are they able to do that? That comes up a lot for me, Ryan. Thank you for bringing that up.
I've spoken with Carrie mm-hmm. at Temple View about these scenarios, and his response is, you know, like you're saying, it depends on the state, depending on what their laws are. But also it depends on, like, if somebody wants to general contract it, which means they're just basically hiring other contractors, any other mm-hmm. stuff that would require licensing, like HVAC or plumbing or electrical, they'd have to hire somebody with licenses for those things, obviously, to be able to pull permits. But my question from a processing standpoint is, then do we have to, if we had a situation like that, then do we have to go to each of those individual contractors? We have to go to the electrician, to the HVAC person, to the plumber, and get individual licensing and insurance on each of those? I mean, have you ever had to work a file like that?
I have. Uh-huh. We have one right now, Thomas Mott. It's the same exact thing, and it's with Temple View. Yeah, I actually did have to do that on his file, and he has, like, a separate person for, like, everything. Because, with Thomas Mott's file, it's a property he actually already owns. This is a refinance rehab. So he wants to be the main GC, and he wants to control the contractors, and he has experience doing this. So I did verify with Templeview that was okay. But, yeah, I had to then I had to go and get proof of licenses actually on the smaller GCs and stuff. And that wasn't really actually because of Templeview. It was actually because of the appraisal company. This deal's a little out of control. But you're just going to have to get clarification from Templeview or the rehab lender on that, like, up front. That would be a really nice thing if when we send someone a document list and tell them what's expected of them. Again, like at that point, it'd be really nice if the borrower would come back and say, hey, I plan to do the work myself, you know, or don't. Sometimes they don't. But anytime I get into a rehab deal with somebody, I always bring up the fact that the contractor should be licensed and insured, especially with Templeview, because we need these documents. We need a copy of their insurance. And that usually then comes up at that point, and then I just have to clarify it with Templeview. It's a case-to-case situation, just so you know. So I just don't have a 100% clear answer for you. Yeah, it's just something you got to clarify with them, with Katia. She'll get it answered by the construction department and get back to you. Okay, all right, we got a couple more minutes here. Let's go through the entity documents, a couple other things. Hope, if you have to go, I know you're dealing with a bunch of stuff in the office. Just go, you know. You're not really going to be doing processing anyways just because of your schedule. So,
Megan, can I ask you a quick question? Going back to contracts, purchase contracts, I find often that the borrower is the contract is in their personal name.
Yep.
Can it be changed to the entity prior to closing, or can it be at the closing table? Or how do we handle that?
So, good question. Thank you so much for bringing that up. I'm going to have to start taking some notes as we're doing this. You guys are giving me a lot of good ideas. So that's always the thing. If the contract is in the borrower's personal name and they're closing in the entity, the lender's underwriting before closing will say, you know, tell you, hey, we need an addendum switching the buyer to the entity name. They won't close the deal without that addendum saying that, you know, the closing is in the entity's name. So now that I've learned that so many times the hard way, all the lenders are the same. If the contract, the purchase and sales contract is in the entity name, or sorry, borrower's name, I apologize, and they are requiring the borrower to close in an entity name, they want that addendum. So I just, again, this is why I always find out from day one who's the realtor, who's the lawyer, who's the insurance person, who's the title representative, who's the contractor. And that's pretty much the most of the contacts I need to know. I go to them right away and I just let them know. I send them an email. I say, hey, you know, I always introduce myself. I'm the mortgage broker helping out, Deidre Stanton on this file for property address. I always put the address in the email whenever I address any third party, because that is how most people track files. If you're a realtor, you track everything by property addresses and the borrower's name. But, Evie, just so you know, that I just go to them right away because I already know it's going to come up. And vice versa, if the contract is in the entity name and they actually are going to close in their personal name and are allowed to do that, some of our lenders do allow that. Vizio allows you to close in your personal name or entity name. You can pick. But say the contract was in the entity name and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, no, I'm going to close my personal name. Yeah, you have to go and get an addendum making the buyer that person's personal name and not the entity name if that's what's on the contract. Did you have any more questions about that? Yeah.
I think that was the main one.
Okay. All right. I know we're coming up here, guys, on an hour. I want to just try to get through this file real quick, and then I just need to write myself some notes because you guys are bringing up some good points. GCs, subs, PSA, addendum. If anyone has to go, I 100% understand. I have so many emails right now, and we have like 5 more deals that need to close by this Friday. But I just want to get through this if you're able to stay, just because it's so important now that you guys are going to be processing deals. So if you guys could just click on Entity Docs, we'll run through these really quick. Every one of our lenders requires an EIN document, the state articles, an operating agreement fully signed by all members, and within that operating agreement it also must notate what every member's percentage ship is, a certificate of good standing, and a W-9, and we can go over all of them individually. This is what's going to trip you up probably the most on deals, is people get very, very confused on entity documents. They don't sometimes understand what is the difference between the state articles and the operating agreement, what's the difference between these, and I have people do this to me all the time, just so everyone knows. They will send me their state articles, and they're convinced that is their certificate of good standing document, and then it's this big back and forth, and they're angry, and we need to do a phone call, and, like, you know, all this crazy stuff. So I have example entity documents, just so everyone's aware. This is probably not the best thing to do, but once in a while, if someone is convinced they have sent me what I need, sometimes I will send them examples of other people's entity documents, which I probably shouldn't be doing. But sometimes to stop that friction, you have to physically show someone what you're talking about so they can look at it, what they're sending you, and look at what you need, and they can clearly see these two things are different. And then usually they feel silly, and they're like, oh, okay, I'll go get that. I tell people all the time, just so you know, how to get entity documents. If they don't have a copy of their entity documents, they need to go to their state's website, click on the business section, and contact whoever they need to contact to figure out how to get a copy of their entity documents. Or if they have a lawyer that created the entity, some type of company they paid to create the entity, they have to get a hold of these documents. That is just one thing, just so everyone knows, I do not coordinate for people. I'm not going to call whoever, you know, they have to get the entity documents. You can't call on someone's behalf and be like, this is a bar I'm representing, can you send me their entity documents? They're going to be like, who are you? That's something the bar has to do. So let's click on the Articles of Organization. Okay, so you can even see on page one there, it says a copy of the Articles of Organization, an initial. It's telling you what this document is right there. It's not maybe so obvious because there's a lot of pretty picturing at the top, but if you just read, it will solve 99% of your problems or things that are confusing you. It says the date that it was filed, November 5th, 2018. Always just make note of that, because a lot of our lenders, when we go over the Certificate of Good Standing document, that Certificate of Good Standing document cannot be older than 90 days old. So you need to know when the entity was formed, you know, to see if it's over a 90-day-year-old entity. If it's not over 90 days, then obviously you don't need the Certificate of Good Standing most of the time, although you definitely want to clarify that with the lender, because, you know, the entity's not over 90 days old. But still check with the lender, even if it's a newer formed entity, if you need a Certificate of Good Standing anyways, because some lenders will tell you yes and some lenders will tell you no. But that's it. You can see one thing on here in the bottom of page one. You can see that seal and that stamp. Always make sure there's some type of seal and stamp on them. I have had so many underwriters come back to me and be like, oh, you sent me the articles, but they're not stamped. So how do we know that the state acknowledges them? Good question, you know? So just always make sure it's stamped. Some people's state articles are not as pretty looking as this document. Some states, the way they issue them, we'll go over that some other day. It's just, I don't know, it's not as clear and it's not as pretty, and almost sometimes there's like handwritten stuff on some of them. As long as it's stamped by the state, it should be okay. But if you have any questions about it, again, you want to go right to that lender's processor. And the processor's not going to know, probably. Just so you know, that processor's going to have to go to their underwriter. The underwriter might have to go to the lawyer, and eventually you'll get an update, hopefully within the next 24 to 48 hours, to be able to give the borrower an answer. Let's go click on the Certificate of Good Standing. Okay. Okay, so this Certificate of Good Standing actually almost looks exactly like the state articles. It's a little different. It's shorter. The verbiage on is a little, just so you know, most Certificate of Good Standing documents actually say that on them. Like, it actually says the Certificate of Good Standing, usually in big, bold letters somewhere. But if you start reading this, actually, you can see after the date, November 5th, 2018, there's a second paragraph down here. If you start reading that, the very at the end is in good standing and is authorized to do business in this state. There you go. That's a certificate of good standing. It'd be nicer if it just said certificate of good standing in big bold letters on it. A lot of them do. Some of them don't. You have to read. But as long as you see those good standing words on there, that should be it. But again, if you have any questions, you know, definitely check with the lender or me. I can help you as well. And just always make sure these things are not older than 90 days old. If they give you a certificate of good standing from 2017 and it's, you know, now the end of 2018, that's not going to work. The underwriter will come back to you again last minute before closing and just say, hey, our underwriting requirements require this document is less than 90 days old and this one isn't. You can see they got a copy of theirs on December 5th, 2018. You'll see on the bottom left there, it's stamped. So, you know, that's how you can tell when they got a copy of it. Let's go back. All right. The EIN document is a really simple document. You can get these on the IRS's website almost instantly. I mean, you can file for an EIN instantly and get a copy of this document. I actually have, you can see right on the top of any type of EIN document, it actually says IRS, Department of Treasury, right on it. This is what they all look like, the company names there. A lot of people, for some reason, like when I ask them for their EIN document, they'll just send me their EIN number. But I actually need that. You are going to need the document. The number is great. Thank you. I always keep it in the notes and even in the background notes on the left side just to have it because it's an important number. But I actually need the document. You know, you don't actually, this is usually a two-page document. It looks just like this. You don't actually need page two. You just need page one. But if they can send you the whole thing, that's nice. Okay, let's get to the operating agreement. And this is, you know, the only reason there's not a W-9 in here is because Temple View has a W-9 form right on their application, or you would also see a W-9 in here as well.
Hey, Megan?
Yeah.
So if somebody asks you, hey, where do I get my EIN document, you just direct them to irs.gov, and they should be able to get it off the website?
They should be able to get a copy of it from there, yeah. And I actually, if anyone ever asks any of you that, just email me. I have a document that explains how they can get a copy of their EIN document if they've lost it.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I didn't upload it to here, but, you know, we'll go over it some other day. Anyways, if anyone is confused about how to get their EIN document, just email me. I'll get you that document over. But if they're confused on how to get any of their other entity documents, that's not something you can assist them on. They're going to have to contact their state or whoever helped them form their entity. All right, so the operating agreement, you'll see it says right at the top, operating agreement. I have people that send me operating agreements all the time, and again, this is how you can tell if someone's a serious borrower or not. They're so disorganized. Like, sometimes it hasn't even said operating agreement at the top. They're just like, this is my operating agreement. I'm like, come on, like, put your company name at the top, put operating agreement, like, just fake it. You know, just make it look nice, please. This is how theirs is. Some people will have their company name at the very top as well. They don't. The only thing I do on these, and these are typically a good amount of pages, some I've had operating agreements that are 30, 40, 50 pages long. You have to go through every page, unfortunately, and make sure every page is there and they're numbered. So page one, you see page one, page two, page three. Now you'll see on page three, this must be a part of every operating agreement. And again, the processor will probably not know this, but you will find out when the underwriter slaps you and wants some revisions. There has to be a section, see page three, Deidre Stanton, she is 100% owner of the company. If there's four members, her address doesn't need to be there. It just needs to be each of their names and their ownership percentage. The lenders don't care about the contribution section. That's nice that it's there. She didn't even fill it out. But they just want all the people's names in that company, how much percentage they own. So make sure that is in the operating agreement somewhere. It can be in any page. Sometimes it's page three. Sometimes it's page 10. Sometimes it's the very last page of the operating agreement. That's why, unfortunately, you have to go through every single page to make sure it's there and to make sure they've given you every single page. I've had people give me operating agreements, and they're missing page 5 out of 30 pages. And again, the underwriter is going to come back before closing and say, you're missing page 5 of this. We need every page. And then just make sure it is fully signed. Now, this one's a really short one, only 6 pages, nice and clean. She has signed the bottom. Every member of the operating agreement also must sign it. It has to be signed. People will send you operating agreements all the time that will not be signed. I don't know why people do that, but you're going to have to let them know every member has to sign this. And most lenders are looking for an actual pen signature, but if they've docu-signed it, that should be acceptable. Those are the entity docs. Does anyone have any questions about entity docs? The only other thing I want to say on entity docs is all the entity documents should be from the same state. You would think that would be a given, but one of our IEPs, we just closed a deal for him. We went back and forth on these entity documents. He kept sending me – he had two companies he formed, and they both had a very, very similar name. It was the same company name. One was Inc., and one just didn't have any denomination at the end. And they were formed in two different states, and he was sending me a mix of all these different entity documents, and they were from different states. It was a mess. But just another tidbit, make sure all the entity documents are from the same state. You can see – I mean, obviously, the EIN number is the EIN number. That's from the IRS. You know, they're everyone. So, but you can see on the certificate of standing, the articles of organization, and the operating agreement does notate a lot of times what state the entity is formed in. It should all be the same state. So keep that in mind. The W-9 document that someone sends you should be, if the deal is closing in the entity name, it should be in the entity's name and should have the company EIN number on it. Sometimes people send you a W-9 document with the entity name, but then they put their social. That's wrong. No, no, no. If you're closing the deal in your personal name, put your personal name in your social. That's how that works out. But if you're closing the deal in the entity name, it's the entity name and the EIN number. And they obviously have to sign the bottom of the W-9. Let's just do one more thing, guys. I'm going to let everyone go because I'm getting hammered with emails, and I know everyone's so busy. I'm sorry this training's taken a while.
Well, I think there's a lot, and there's a lot of parts of it. I'm not surprised that there's, you know, many moving pieces.
There's many moving pieces. So this is what I do during the day, just so everyone knows. The way to close a deal is to control the documents on the deal. If you do not control the documents, your deal will never get closed. And, Marty, I don't know if you're still on, but me and Marty had a deal going with Apex a couple months ago, and Apex is typically a really great lender for us to work with. We've done a lot of deals with Apex. Their processors are very, very well trained, but we happened to get, I guess, a newer processor there or something, and she just totally led Marty down the wrong path. And, you know, Marty kept confirming with her, you know, do you have these things? Did the insurance agent send this to you? Because she wanted to reach out to the third parties, and she kept saying she had these things, and then a couple days before closing, oh, I don't have a copy of the insurance. You know, you have to keep copies of all these things in your file because I'm telling you, these processors at the lenders, they don't care if your deal closes or not, okay? I don't know why, but they don't. You know, maybe they're not commission-based. Maybe they're just salaried, so they don't care. But they will tell you they have things and they don't. They will tell you things are correct and they're not. Anyways, let's just go over some leases. We'll do leases. We'll do insurance. And then we'll get off of here. Purchase and sales agreement, guys, I'm not really going to go over too much of that. We already kind of touched on that if the purchase and sales agreement is in the entity name, that's good as long as the deal is closing in the entity name. If not, you're going to need an addendum. One thing I could just say about the purchase and sales agreement, and Marty, I'm going through this on Elliot's deal a lot, make sure if it's an agreement that has every, like some agreements, every page needs to be initialed, and that's basically how they are. Just make sure the buyer and seller have initialed every single page and they have both signed where they're supposed to sign, because I can't tell you how many times I'm being lazy. You know, I try to go through these things as quickly as I can. I'm scrolling. I went through 20 pages. I saw all the initials and signatures. There's only 5 more pages. I don't go through them because I'm like, you know, they got the first 20 pages right. I'm just going to have faith in them that the last 5 were fully signed. And sometimes they're not. And I should have just went through those other 5 pages, but just make sure it's all signed and initialed. Leases is going to be really easy. If you guys want to click on that, you can. But the biggest thing with leases is just make sure you have every single page of the lease. You have to go through them, unfortunately. You have to go through every single page. I've had people send me, you know, page 1 of the lease, if you click on one of these leases, it says 1 of 6. you should have 6 pages, not just like the signature page or not just the first or the last page. People will try to send you just the first page and then the signature page. They do that to me all the time. And I always tell them, I need every single page of the lease. The underwriter will ask me for it. I need every single page. And it needs to be fully signed. The landlord has to sign it, and so does the tenant. And you can see on page 6, they have both signed. Deidre was very nice to work with. She was so well organized. This is actually a great example of a file to go over because you could see her documents are nice. They look nice. They're organized. She knew what she was doing. She got things to me. So just make sure they're signed. Make sure all the pages are there. You can also see on this lease, this is something that does come up. This is lender specific. This lease is between the company NO2 SAC Transportation LLC and the tenant. Just make sure whoever this lease is between. So we this was the entity we closed in, NO2 SAC Transportation LLC. But if she's trying to close in a different entity name, this is not a rental loan. So I don't want to confuse anybody, but if this was a rental loan and say it was refinanced and you need a copy of all their leases, which you're going to need, those leases the landlord must be the entity name, and then the tenant is obviously the tenant's name, but it has to be the entity name that you're closing in. It can't typically be a different entity name. Now, on a purchase, that's not the case. On a purchase, you can't control who the lease is because your buyer doesn't own the property yet. So that's not a problem. But sometimes when I refinance, I've had underwriters come back to me and say, well, we're closing in this entity name. These leases are between a different entity name and tenant. You know why? That's kind of lender specific. Just keep that in mind. Underwriters will ask you as much as they can possibly ask you. It's their job to do anything they can to rip the file apart. That's their job. So all these things I'm showing you guys will stop that from happening. Our insurance, this is all property insurance. If you want to label yours property insurance, you can. I always have my contractor docs in a different file than insurance, so I know the insurance doc in there is their liability insurance or their workers' comp insurance if they have employees. So that's just how I know. Insurance is always property insurance. One thing about property insurance, let's look at this first one. Insurance agents I still don't understand insurance, just so everyone's aware. But I know there's a lot of different forms. Obviously, there's like an application form they have. They have a binder. They have what's called a declaration page. What I can tell you is most insurance pages that you want actually look exactly like that contractor's liability page. And I believe insurance agents call that the deck page. That's what I always refer to it as, and they end up sending me what I need, declarations page. But it should always have, you're going to have to get from the lender their mortgagee clause. You're going to have to get the loan number on the file. I have also a file for all of our lenders as well where I keep track of that stuff. Every lender's mortgagee clause, every lender's insurance requirements, every lender's title insurance requirements. Just so you know. So throughout the process, if you need those things, just come to me and I'll get them to you. If the lender was smart, they would give them to you up front moving into the process so that you can assist them more. But basically on the declaration page, you should have, it should be in the entity name. Insurance should be in the entity name if we're closing the entity name. So make sure the insurance agent doesn't send it to you when you open it up. It's the borrower's personal name. That happens to me all the time, even though I always tell them we're closing in this entity name and that's how the coverage needs to be. Make sure you let the insurance agent know, like ASAP, on any of your deals. After they pay for the appraisal is the point where we start coordinating with third parties. But make sure that the insurance agent knows from day one. As soon as someone pays for that appraisal, I email the insurance agent, I email the title agent, the title report, and the insurance request, and I'll teach everyone how to do that some other day. But I let them know up front, both parties, this is closing in this entity name. And I have had insurance agents tell me a couple days before closing, we don't provide insurance in entity's name. We only do personal insurance, or we can only issue insurance policy in someone's personal name. you know, why didn't you tell me that from like 2 weeks ago when I told you it needed to be in the entity name? So try to verify with the insurance agent this is okay. You can you know, issue this policy in the entity name. Verify with that with them. So just kind of go through these. I'm just trying to figure out which was actually the right one. On this one, they needed flood insurance on this property because it was in a flood zone. So she gave me a bunch of different flood documents. That's just the submission package. Let me just check. Usually, like the flood, if they need flood insurance, it is kind of like a package like this that you're seeing. Sometimes it's just a document, but what you're really going to have to do with the insurance agent, unless you're very knowledgeable about insurance yourself, is just verify with them, is this the flood package? Is this the proof of insurance page? But I can tell you most of the proof of insurance pages, Templeview accepted this. When I sent it in to them, they accepted these insurance documents the way they are, so somewhere must be what they needed. But most insurance document pages that you need, it looks exactly like that contractor's liability page. And again, it's going to have the loan number on it, the entity name, and the mortgagee clause. It's going to start end date of coverage. That's really what I always ask them for, to send into the lender. And when I send that into the lenders, they approve the insurance. Just going through this. Yeah. Another thing you have to get from the insurance agent is the receipt or an invoice. Some insurance agents can make insurance effective and coverage effective without the borrower having to pay for anything. Some insurance agents can't. Their companies don't work like that. The borrower may have to pay for a month in order for them to activate the policy and them to get you the declaration page or the binder, whatever they're calling it. So if the borrower's paid for a month, we need an invoice showing that they've paid for a month because they should be credited for that on the HUD. Every lender requires insurance is paid in full for a different amount of months on the day of closing. Most of our lenders, whether they're permanent or temporary, require that insurance is paid in full for 12 months on the day of closing. So the reason you need an invoice from them, first of all, you need some type of invoice for them showing what does 12 months of coverage cost, you know? And then you need a receipt if they have paid any of that to show what they have paid for. So again, if they've paid for 1 month, then at closing on the HUD, there's only going to be a fee for 11 months of insurance, not 12. So that's really it, guys. I know I got way over title documents. I don't even know where to begin on that. You know, HUD ones and stuff like that. Actually, you know what? We'll go over title documents a different time, and I can tell you kind of how to organize them. I always make a file here where it says HUD. Some closings, depending on the property type, it's not a HUD. It's a closing statement or a settlement statement. I just call it HUD. In my folder, I know. I don't keep the HUD in with the title documents, just so everyone's aware. I think you guys should do it exactly how I'm doing it. You know, obviously the HUD is a part of the title documents. The reason it's separate for me is because that's how we verify that we're getting paid and our money is coming to us. So you could check out the HUD in here. This was the final one. I always label the final one final. If they keep changing, I'll label them by date. But what I've been doing recently is just the ones that aren't final, I've just been getting rid of them, throwing them in my trash, because you'll get like 6 or 7 revisions of this thing sometimes, and it's like all I need is the final one. I don't need every single revision in my folder anyways. But I keep that there because when the first thing I do when I get that HUD is make sure we're on there, because most of the time we're not. I go right to the loan amount. I see the loan amount on here, $318,750. I go right into the folder to where our fee agreement is, see how much we were charging them. I take that loan amount. If we're charging 2 points, I do that times 0.02. And I scroll down to page 2 to make sure there's a line item for 11 Capital Finance. And as you can see, we're line 808 on this HUD, broker referral fee, 11 Capital Finance, $6,375. Make sure we're on there. Anything on the HUD that's labeled POC means it was already prepaid. So you'll see line 803, the appraisal was prepaid. If you notice on here something, you're looking over a HUD for a client and something you know was prepaid, and I always ask people for copies of receipts, and this is why I do. When someone pays for an appraisal, I ask them, can I have a copy of your receipt? Not because I'm trying to get you to submit me extra paperwork, because sometimes people get offended, like, oh, I got to send you everything. I'm like, I'm trying to make sure you get credited for this, that it's not a closing cost on the wrong side. So if I see it on the HUD, I can tell the title company, I have a receipt for this, you know? The POC 199, you know, Ryan, you know that's how Temple View works. They take 199 up front, then 800 is that closing because they have a 999 closing fee. Anything already prepaid should be marked as POC. So I can always verify on these things, the lender's fee, our fee, the lender's closing fees, which all fees, just so everyone knows, are on the second page. Things I can't really verify for a borrower when I call them to go over these things. I mean, if there's a fee on there for insurance, I can go over that with them because I know how much they paid and I know how much they need to pay. But when it comes to, like, this other stuff on here, like the title charges, I don't know if that stuff's accurate because I'm not a title agent. You know, so if anyone ever has questions about that, you know, I always offer to do a joint call with their title rep if they want me to. If they want me to be on the call, I really don't have to be on that call because I'm not their title agent. But, you know, I say to them, you know, if any of these title fees you are confused about, you want to just call them because they keep track of all that recording stuff, notary fees, transfer tax. Like, I don't know what those things are in your town and state and all that stuff. That's what title agents do. I know we went really over, guys. Thank you so much for staying on with me. Does anyone have any questions I can answer?
Is Trina still?
I don't know. Do you want me to ask?
Yeah.
Hey, Trina, are you still there?
I don't know. I'm still here.
Oh, you're still
I'm
here.
I'm still here. I was just muted.
Yeah, so was I. I was muted.
Trina, I don't know how your schedule looks. I got to jump on my call.
Right.
I'd like to see if we can get together after my call because and this is kind of for everybody why I want to jump in right now. We added on the pipeline report who the processor is going to be for loan files.
Right.
So what we're going to do today, and if we can't squeeze it in today or tomorrow, Trina, is what we're going to do is we're going to go into all appraisals ordered, and we're going to plug in who the appraisers are on all of the current loan files, which is going to be 98% is going to be Meg.
Actually, I think I know what most of them are, so let me plug them in tonight, and I'll hit you with them tomorrow to verify. How's that? It'll be a lot more efficient.
Beautiful. Send me over the pipeline report where I can read it, where it shows the processors for each file.
Sure.
How this translates for the team, guys, is we're going to start doing a pipeline report. I've been putting this off for the longest time because the last thing in the world we need is another meeting or another report. But we are on Fridays going to have a pipeline report for everybody because everybody's going to be processing now. And it'll be a great time where we can ask questions on who's processing a particular loan file, where is it in the process, how compliant is the borrower, any problems or questions that you may have, and we're all going to learn it together. So figure Fridays, 9:30, 10 o'clock, half hour, 45-minute pipeline call from now on moving forward. All right?
Okay.
All right. That's it, guys. Does anyone have any questions about the documents or anything we went over today? I know that was a lot to throw at you, but if you...
I'm probably going to go back to the recording and re-listen to everything because I had a fire to put out that Chris and Trina know about, something that I found in the CRM, and I had to talk to Dana real quick, so...
Okay, yeah, no big deal, but besides Hope, guys, does anyone have any questions about any of the documents we went over? All right, I think we're good.
Well, while working on them, but for now, I think I'm good, but I'm sure when it's in front of me, I may feel differently, so we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone has any questions as you're going through the process, just let me know. But these are just all these things you have to pay attention to on a loan and make sure they all match up. And just the only thing I can impress before we're going to get off is that nobody will tell you these things need to be corrected until like 2 days prior to closing. And
oh,
that's
Lord.
Not the time to get them corrected. Because if you send the borrower like 5-6 things they need to get corrected, they can't get them to you by tomorrow most of the time. And if they're not corrected prior to closing, the loan doesn't close. The loan keeps getting delayed. So I can't tell you how important it is to go through these things and make sure they're accurate, make sure they're correct. and make sure you have all the closing, all the documents into the lender correct at least 4 days prior to closing. That's ideal to make sure that everything's on schedule for the closing date. So I'm going to let you guys go. Thank you guys, everyone, for being on the call. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.